And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Danger and Jay.
All right, welcome into the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Growlin' Paul Ener Jr., Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you here. We don't have any naming rights. We're partially presented by Magic Spoon, and then there's always other random things that we can be presented by, but nothing as cool or as lucrative as Paycor Stadium, which is now the new home name of Paul, what the artist formerly known as Paul Brown Stadium.
I think it makes sense. It doesn't sound awful like a lot of these naming rights do. It kind of has a smooth tone coming off, and I kind of wrote about it in the story. It makes total sense that a payroll company is buying the naming rights so that the Bengals can manage their payroll and pay Joe Burrow by putting this money in escrow. I'll be interested to see what the fan reaction is. Everybody typically hates sponsor names on stadiums, but I think this is a good one.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that topic here during the show. We got a lot to get to. You know, we've got the first preseason game is coming up on Friday, so we're gonna talk about some players that we are looking forward to watching, names that you may not have thought of and some that were kind of told to us this week as we've kind of done some asking players who they are most looking forward to watching, and some names have popped out there. So we're going to talk a little bit about who is got everybody thinking about what are they going to look like on Friday. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We are going to bring in our good friend Mo Egger. He seems like the perfect person to bring in, and we talk all things stadium naming rights. And so we'll discuss that with him. We'll be coming to him here if you're live. Thanks everybody that's popping in on the YouTube channel. We'll come in with him right around 10:30. And we have to talk about Joe Burrow health, throwing a football, kind of. Technically tossing a football, and some other takeaways from things that are going on at camp with some insider scoops. With the end, we will take some of your questions. So if you are here on the YouTube stream, drop your questions in, or otherwise, we've got a few more that have been dropped in on Twitter that we will get to. So we will have a few of your questions that we'll try to pump through here at the end of the show. So let's start news, Jay. News of the day. What do we got? I think a few things that stick out to me: Lael Collins, T. Higgins, getting much, much closer. I mean, they're progressing well. T. Higgins, in particular, who looks good, took part in one-on-ones. He's going to be taking part in seven-on-sevens, and that is all things that he has not been doing yet. Anybody that saw some of the video from some of the highlights of practice yesterday, he had a leaping grab over top of Cam Taylor-Britt in a red zone drill that in a one-on-one that certainly looked like the T. Higgins that you know and have seen. So that was good. And then Lael Collins looking much better, much more active in the rehab he's still doing on the side. So he's still on the NFI list, but looking much more like a guy who's ready to take the next step and get in on these practices soon.
Yeah, Higgins is the big one because we haven't seen him do much. And he even expressed his frustration with having to go over on the side field and run when they went into team drills. And he ran a few routes in one-on-ones yesterday, and they didn't do any sevens. But you're right, had they done seven-on-seven, it was a very, very heavy special teams day yesterday. So tough luck to any of you that went down to watch practice because it wasn't super exciting. But if they had done seven on sevens, he would have been out there. I assume we will see that on Wednesday. The Bengals off today on Tuesday as we record this. And Collins also trending in the right direction. This is what they aimed for. You're never going to be totally healthy, but the whole point of having that abbreviated lighter offseason was to make sure that you had everybody ready to go. And there are no, serious pending issues. Joe Burrow, maybe the most serious. And again, everything right now is trending upward for him.
No doubt. The depth chart. The like unofficial first depth chart came out. I don't even know that we need to talk about it. I mean, it's the same depth chart. I have one, of course, for sort of a working file I always have on my computer, the Bengals depth chart, and it was an exact replica of that. There were no surprises. It's where everybody has been playing, has been practicing, and so very, very standard stuff. I mean, the rookies that were drafted high are where you would think they would be. Right there in those backup roles, Volson behind Carmen and Dax Hill right there, technically in there behind Bates and Carter, Zach Carter right in there at the three technique backup to BJ Hill. So all those guys sort of slotted into where you think that they would be. Did anything stick out to you on that, Jay? I mean, it seemed very much what we thought it would be.
No, and that first depth chart always comes with the disclaimer that that is not put together by the coaching staff. That is the media relations department putting that in there. It's all, like you said, it's slotted as though you could have made that depth chart the day after the draft. There's nothing that's really happened to kind of change anything. That's what these preseason games are for. When you see the week one depth chart, obviously a lot of these guys aren't even going to be on there because you're going to be cut down to 53, but that's when you're really going to get a better idea of where these newcomers stand and the position battles, Carmen and Volson. Carmen's there by default right now. Doesn't mean Volson can't beat him out, but Carmen is ahead of him. So yeah, nothing really stood out. It was, as you said, you had your own ready to go and it was the exact same.
Yeah. Deontay Smith with a ding of the back injury that he's kind of powering through day to day, I guess, on that. So we'll see when he comes back, but just a matter of time.
Yeah, I mean, he's already, I mean, he's missed two practices and he's already back on the rehab field. He's been wearing this weird little vest with red lights on it. I guess it pulses and helps the muscles in his back. Not thought to be serious. Just like everyone else that's dealing with dings right now, that are not on a list, that there's no real concerns. Even Drew Sample had a knee injury and he avoided it being a catastrophic injury. It looked bad. He went off on the cart. He's wearing a big brace, but Zach Taylor said he avoided the worst that it could have been. And he's only going to be out for a couple weeks. It's just going to give Mitchell Wilcox some more run in the preseason games. So overall, things trending pretty well health-wise for this Bengals team, just like it was most of last year.
Yep. You need those Mitch Wilcox reps.
Absolutely.
Got to get those. Khalid Kareem off the PUP. Jay, you talked to Khalid and, I mentioned him in Stock Report as a down because he had to sit there, not being back yet, off something that he had surgery on way back after the Super Bowl, and watch a slew of young edge rushers look really good, all guys that are trying to take his spot, and he had to sit there and watch that. Well, him coming off the list and starting to get back into practice now is a step in the right direction for him, but I mean, it was a long time coming.
Yeah, it was. And he hasn't really flashed much in his first 2 years, but he's been dealing with a lot of injuries. And he pointed out he tore his labrum in that preseason game last year, took a few weeks off on IR, came back and continued to play through it, knowing it needed surgery at some point. And then that iconic play where he steals the ball from Drew Lock in the Denver game and takes off with it the other way, and he gets a helmet to helmet, gets concussed on the tackle, and he said he re-injured the shoulder on that play where he landed on it. So he missed another couple of weeks with what was listed as a concussion, but it was also re-injuring that labrum. And then he still came back and played through it again and was productive in limited snaps. So now he's got it totally cleaned up with surgery a week after the Super Bowl. So a big chance for him. It's a slow start to camp, but I imagine, I don't know if we'll see him Friday, but we should see him in these last two preseason games, and a big chance for him to kind of get his name thrown into that mix too with all these young guys on the defensive line.
Jay, you going with iconic on that Kareem play?
For the season, I will say, and not in Bengals lore, but I mean
it was a huge play.
Yeah.
I feel like that's an insult to the word iconic.
Well, okay. Maybe that was a little hyperbole, but it was so rare. I mean, how many times do you see
him?
Yeah. Well, how many times do you see a guy, a defender just rip the ball out of a quarterback's hands and take off the other way? It was
only to be concussed himself.
Exactly. And if you remember, that was fourth quarter. The Broncos have second and goal at the 9. The Bengals are leading 15-10. If they score a touchdown there, they take the lead. Maybe the Bengals don't win that. Maybe the whole Super Bowl run looks different. Maybe it doesn't happen at all. I mean, that was a big play in the course of the season last year.
Totally agree. We'll go. How about low key iconic?
Yeah, semi iconic.
Can I go with that? Semi iconic. Semi iconic. We can do that. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
The big news has been to the next two topics that we're going to kind of focus on. And let's start with the news that we have to talk about. We're actually legally obligated to make sure we get at least 5 to 10 minutes of Joe Burrow talk in. But we have to now, as you know, we're really starting to get a better feel just in what we've seen and conversations we've had around the building for exactly what is going on with Joe Burrow and where he's at. And you know, the bottom line is all that matters is it's really encouraging what has happened. And I'll start with this. Zach Taylor spoke a little bit about the fact that Joe Burrow was out at practice on Monday, and there was no cart. He even jogged around at times. He technically kind of soft tossed a football and was doing a little bit of things. But, you know, he's the fact that he's out there. We're no longer talking about the dude sitting on the cart. He's looking more like himself. He's standing the whole time. The wincing and the pick line and all those conversations are gone now. And that's such a huge, big deal. Let's hear what Zach Taylor discussing that with a few reporters in a little gaggle after practice yesterday.
So there was a podcast that mentioned something about Burrow's surgery maybe not going as smoothly as we thought. Can we just get an update on him, how the procedure went, and when you expect? It seems like he was moving around better today.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you see is what you get. He looks good to me. He's starting to get better every single day. And I don't want to put a timeline on when he gets out here and starts throwing and stuff, but it's been encouraging. He's back to himself in meetings and so looking good. I've never had that surgery. I don't know how it feels, so I'm not going to make any predictions, but we're excited about the progress he's making.
Is he going to have to put on some more weight? It looks like he's lost a noticeable amount of weight.
No, I think he did a great job taking care of himself in the offseason, and so he's in a good place.
Zach, how much of not putting a timetable on him is making sure he's not rushing himself to get out here by a specific time?
Yeah, he knows himself way better than we do, and so I trust, you know, the communications with him to know that when we're going to get him back out here. But in the meantime, we're getting good work with his other quarterbacks,
All right, there's a Zach Taylor kind of talking a little bit at the end of practice there. And, you know, the thing is, I think there's a few things to touch on here. One, yeah, the weight thing. So we've mentioned this. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is skinnier. He looks skinny. Yeah, because he wasn't able to eat for like a week and some change. When you talk about him coming out of this surgery and having the complications that happened, you're going to lose some weight. You can gain it back on quickly. You can gain your strength back, but that's a big part of, it is a big part of this. It is noticeable. It is part of this is that, he is going to have to put that weight back on and get himself back, you know, ramped up into the type of shape and that he wants to be in. That's both in weight, that's in conditioning, that's in all that stuff that he's had to take a break from here for a few weeks.
Yeah. I mean, we still don't know. I mean, how much he's been able to lift, I would imagine not much at all, because it's not just the kind of weight that I would like to lose in the stomach area. He looks, upper body looks thinner. His shoulders look thinner. And I don't know how much of that you can lose in just a couple weeks. It was 2 weeks ago today that he had the surgery, but it is going to take a little bit to get back up to full strength and full conditioning. It is noticeable when you see him, but it's not gasp worthy where it's like, oh my gosh. I don't imagine it's going to be an issue that lingers. The strength and conditioning staff, I mean, he knows what he needs to do. Like Zach said, he knows himself better than anybody. I don't anticipate him having this look to him very much longer. I whether he's sharp and throwing the ball and all that stuff, that'll remain to seen. But I think his body will get back to looking like it was pre-surgery in no time.
Yeah, I mean, he's starting the rehab process of this. He's eating. He can focus on that. I mean, they have programs to help him deal with that. Whether we're talking about putting on weight, putting on strength, get ramping back up. I mean, that's all part of a process that he's going through right now. And you know, one of the big things that was pointed out to me by somebody was that he's back to being himself again. You know, and personality wise, and feeling engaged, and you know, when you go through something like what he went through. It's tough. You're just dealing with all kinds of pain. You're trying to power through, and you can tell someone is starting to turn the corner by when they start acting right. Like, I mean, anybody that's had anything can say this. I mean, I go back specifically to me. I had my back surgery last November. Like, I don't think people liked being around me. You can ask my wife. in the week or two specifically after the surgery, like, but once you know, you started really getting really starting to feel like you can be yourself and see the light again, you see it's noticeable, you know, to those around you. And I think it's been noticeable, you know, to those around Joe, is that Joe's kind of being Joe again, and that's a big deal. And you know, you can see the confidence in him starting to come back. And so, look, as far as when he will be back in things, we can only, you know, you're still kind of in the guesstimate, because it's so matter of how he feels. But I mean, I would not, considering what we have seen and what we know about what the surgery that he had and what he's coming back from, you know, I think you're going to see him probably back doing in practice in some fashion, probably maybe next week. I think I could very much see him being full go that week of the Rams and having the Rams practices. I think there's some eyes on those two Rams practices, which will be, you're talking about the 24th and 25th of August, so basically 2 weeks from now, where that week and in those practices, he'll be out there, and that'll be his dress rehearsal. That'll be his get right days, you know, to get himself really prepared for the season. And I expect him to be a part of that. I think that's the expectation. You never know. And so you hesitate, but we're kind of having to try to, you know, put all our clues together of everything that we have here. And if I'm doing that, that's kind of where the signs point to right now, is that we should probably see him back at that point. If all continues to go well.
Yeah, because since they announced those joint practices with the Rams, that's what they've been pointing toward, is really that is what is going to be the main work for the starters this preseason. You're not going to see the starters in much, if any, of this preseason game action. So that's going to be the two big days, those joint practices. So I'm sure that's what they're targeting, to have him back by then, if not sooner. Like you said, it would, the original timeline of 1 to 2 weeks, today is the second week. So it makes sense that he could get back to doing some easing back in starting next week after they get through this first preseason game. But I would expect to see him against the Rams. And I don't think there's any concern there with the relationship between Sean and Zach. There's an understanding. Sometimes things get a little feisty in these joint practices. I don't think you're going to have to worry about anybody getting too close to Burrow when they go in those live sessions.
Yeah, we'll continue to monitor the Burrow thing as it goes along. But I would say the tone is much more encouraging today than it certainly was the last time we spoke, and I expect that to be the case next time after a few more practices, and we'll see how he starts to gradually move up. Again, it's just a matter of him getting comfortable with how he feels, and that starting to feel better, and his pain tolerance of what he can do, and then working within the doctor's program of the rehab, Nick Cosgray, getting him back up to speed on the pace that they want to. But yeah, I think that the tone around all of it, much, much better today, and that's kind of really the overwhelming thing. Jay, I have skipped over your stat on Joe Burrow two consecutive episodes. You've had a Jay's Got Stats on Burrow that you had ready to go, and both times I have skipped over it. Well, not today. Third time is the charm.
Okay.
Jay's Got Stats on Joe Burrow, since we talk about him every episode, and I keep dissing it. So let's go.
So I went and looked at all the quarterbacks that were drafted number one overall since 1970 from the NFL-AFL merger, who led their team to a Super Bowl at some point. There's been 11 that did it. Joe Burrow, the fastest to do it in year two. The average time it took the others was 6.3 years to get to their first Super Bowl, to start in their first Super Bowl. Burrow actually became he passed Jared Goff. Jared Goff did it in year three with Zach Taylor and Sean McVay and the Rams. But you look at some other quarterbacks on this list, Eli Manning in year four, Aikman year four, Bledsoe, John Elway all did it in their fourth year. Stafford, who beat the Bengals in the Super Bowl in February, 13th year. Jim Plunkett, it took him 12 years. So these guys, it's first of all, only 11 number one overall picks made it to starting in a Super Bowl. There was 27 quarterbacks picked number one overall during that time. Looked at the top five picks. 56 guys have been drafted in the top five. Only 16 have started a Super Bowl. And still, Burrow at the top of that list for getting his team to a Super Bowl and starting in that Super Bowl the fastest, doing it in year two. I think that's a big reason getting it. We've talked about it, where they were a year early. We thought this would be the year when the playoff window would really fly open. So it was a little unexpected just in the micro of what the Bengals are/were to get there last year. But you put it up against NFL history too. That just makes it even more impressive that in year two, Burrow got to the Super Bowl.
I mean, at this point, what else can you say?
Yeah.
You know, it's like these numbers are crazy, but you almost gloss over them, because it's like, yeah, everything that has happened has been remarkable when it comes to connecting hype to production. There's been very few like it. Let's start talking now a little bit about the stadium deal, Jay. And we're going to bring in Mo here in a few minutes as we talk through it. But there's some basics. So Paycor Stadium is the new name of the artist formerly known as Paul Brown Stadium. 16-year deal. Big numbers. The actual financial numbers are not disclosed, but I think you could probably assume that they're probably somewhere in the range between $6 million per year to $10 million per year, depending on how good or sweet the deal ended up being, just when you look at what the market is for this type of thing. It's a 10 years, or t- excuse me, 10, if it was $10 million over 16 years, You're talking 160, let's say a little under that. Let's say it ended up at 150 million. Let's just say that. The actual lease says that that breakdown would end up being the Bengals getting 123 million of it and the county getting 27 million of it by virtue of the Bengals get the first 63 million off the top and then the rest splits 70-30, Bengals getting 70%. So if it ended up at 150, again, we don't know this financial. I'm using this hypothetically for ease of math. You'd be looking at the Bengals pocketing $123 million off of this deal and the county getting $27 million over the course of the 16 years. Now that would be a very good deal if that is the case, and maybe it is. But the thing is, and we talked about it before, it's the time is now, right? I mean, this is what it is. It's putting the money in escrow for Burrow. It's things like the indoor practice facility, and they have just been on a bender of striking while the iron is hot here. When you're talking about Kettering Health with all over the practice, everything, basically, I mean, I think we counted it up. There was like 32 signs for Kettering Health around the practice facility. You got the indoor practice facility. I'm sure it's going to have some signage as part of it. We've got the new gates. Alta Fiber Gate is up now. You've got the Betfred sponsorship. I mean, I know I'm forgetting them because there's been so many. They have just been on an absolute bender of pocketing off of all of this, not to mention selling out season tickets, filling the suites. I mean, it is it's a good time to be collecting checks for the Bengals.
Yeah, just waiting for that pizza sponsorship. It's not like last year where no one wanted to be the pizza sponsor. I think they've got a lot of companies interested this year, and not just pizza, a lot of other smaller sponsors trying to get on board, and they're weeding their way through them. And it's amazing what one magic run like that in the postseason can do financially for this franchise. And we've said, I mean, Joe Burrow is at the heart of everything that happens with this team. And this is a big part, this naming deal to get the money in escrow for his contract. It's going to be a lot of guaranteed money in that contract. It has to be put aside. I don't think it's going to touch the $230 million that Deshaun Watson got, but it is. I was thinking probably in the $100 to $150 million range for this. So I think you're right on with about $9-10 million a year for the naming rights. And maybe that money will come out if it becomes public record, because the county's going to have to be involved in it and get their share. But as of now, the Bengals not releasing the terms of the agreement.
Yeah, we'll find out soon enough, but it's substantial, and we kind of know what that market looks like in general. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is Paycor, Cincinnati based, and a long-term deal that goes well beyond the expiration of the lease in 2026. And we've talked about it. We dropped a question into our state of the franchise survey, and there's just been so much momentum recently in dispelling any idea that the Bengals would leave, or that this thing is going to end up in a situation where the Bengals have to leave. And this is really, in my opinion, the most public, emphatic example of them saying, we're here. We want to be here. We want to be connected to this city. We want to be connected with a local business in the biggest way. And we want that to connect to our stadium that we want to renovate and stay here. And we want to keep Joe Burrow here. And we want this to go on, and you can't, put your money where your mouth is, right? You can say it all you want. This is them with the rights, with a local company, and I think that does go a long way.
Yeah. I mean, if something were to go south and they were even in consideration of leaving town before this deal's up, you gotta write a big check back to Paycor to get out of here. It's not gonna happen. This is a commitment. And not that it felt like a serious threat, but it always kind of hung out there. The end of the lease, what's going to happen? And this almost serves as an extension of the lease, not officially, but for the next 16 years, this team's going to be rooted right where it started.
Yeah, so that's a lot of the basics of it. I'm sure, you know, we'll see the actual, you know, renderings and the actual signage will develop as they go along, but it is Paycor Stadium as of now. On the website, the things have been changed. I'm sure there will be things that we'll see. There'll still be a Paul Brown Stadium hanging around there. Also, can we get statue? Paul Brown Stadium, can we get a Paul Brown statue now? If you're going to take the name off, can we get a statue out front? Maybe that's the change that you end up with here. Feels like that could maybe be the next step and a good timing for that. Just put it right next to the Burrow statue, I guess. You could just put them right next to each other. You could have Paul Brown statue hugging Joe Burrow. The generations come together. Maybe we could do something like that.
Would they put the statue out on the concourse somewhere, or would they actually put it inside the gates? I know a lot of people put them outside, but I think I don't know.
The main gate. I think the main gate and concourse that you can, where you come in, facing Great American Ballpark out there, maybe.
Yeah, and then that way people can take pictures, even not on game days. People are going to be taking pictures, and yep.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, a big deal. Mike addressed it, doing it now because it's good for the football team, you know, and that's really the part of this that he said and that mattered to him, you know, was if I'm going to take the name off, I'm going to do it because it's good for the football team. And that's what this ends up being. All right, let's just take a quick break.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Now we can bring in our good friend Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 as we've sort of laid out the land here already on this deal and the stadium deal. And then we can talk about Mo's tweets about this.
Oh boy.
Because, yeah. There's a few out there. How are you been?
I'm doing great, guys. What's going on?
Not much. We thought you might be a good person to talk to about the stadium naming rights. I don't know.
Yeah.
It feels like a good
topic.
When
you want a naming rights guy, you call Mo.
That's call Mo. No, I want an opinion on naming rights guy, and I call Mo.
Hmm.
Jay, do you have tweets from Tweet Count?
I do. You know, I kind of thought this was going to be like the long distance runner that starts way too fast and then peters out at the end. He had a career high 179 last week, and I was waiting for the crash, but no such thing. 172 this week.
Wow.
But a lot of thank yous because Mo has started his own podcast and there was a lot of feedback to that. And he was. And I did. I listened to that first episode with Doc. It was really, really good.
Well, thank you. It was fun to do. Yeah. Announcing you have a podcast is like announcing your house has windows. I mean, who doesn't at this point, right? Yeah. So it doesn't exactly make me put me in exclusive company.
But it is going to be a fun podcast. I'm excited to see some. I'm really excited to see who some of the other guests are going to be, Mo.
Me too, Paul.
Yeah. You know, and it's not a sports podcast necessarily. Sports adjacent, personality driven of people in Cincinnati. Correct.
I just want it to be interesting conversations with people who I think are interesting, and if they're attached to sports, terrific. If they have nothing to do with sports, terrific. If they're well known, great. If nobody's ever heard of them but me, that's okay too. I like long form conversations. I like having a chance to sit down with people and talk about them more than sometimes a specific subject. And as much as I love radio and it will always be my first love, and I hope to do it forever, radio doesn't really afford you that chance. So especially in the format that we're in. So I've wanted to do this for a while, and I don't know if it's going to be something that I do forever, but it has sort of, I don't know, given me a little bit of a creative jolt, which I needed.
Yeah, I like that. I'll start off with what we need to get going, and that is a tweet from you. Just call it Peugeot Stadium, because that's all that matters. And I agree. I mean, it does just kind of sit so nice, Peugeot Stadium. I'm for it.
I mean, the T-shirts have been printed, right? Like, yeah, the paid with no credit given to me, of course. No, I mean, that's I heard you guys talking about, you know, the commitment, and I know, Paul, you tweeted about this. This might be the most tangible sign that we've had that the Cincinnati Bengals are not going anywhere. They're certainly not bolting after 2026. And as far-fetched as that might sound to some, that was a thing. That was a thing just a couple of years ago. OMG, what's going to happen in 2026? How bad is the relationship between the Bengals and the public? And so would the NFL compel them to bolt? They want to put a team in Mexico City. They want to put a team in Toronto. Hell, maybe they put a third team in LA. The NFL doesn't really have much regard for small markets. And so what if Goodell just forces the Bengals to go? Well, this would be a very clear sign that that has never been less likely. But more than anything for me, I mean, look, in a very sort of pure sense, would I love it if there weren't corporate names on everything? Of course. Is it blatantly hypocritical for me, who works in radio and advertising driven business, to begrudge anybody attaching a sponsor on anything? Absolutely. If taking the Paycor money means this increases the odds of Joe Burrow taking every snap of the prime years of his career in a Bengals uniform in that stadium, call it whatever you want. I couldn't care less if the company is local or not. It is, which is great. I don't really care about the actual name itself, because we can call it whatever we want. I'm all about enabling the Brown family to stash the money away needed to ensure that Joe plays his entire career, or at least the good years of his career, in a Bengals uniform. And so if this helped accomplish that, I'm for it.
You talk about calling it whatever you want. I was going to ask you about that, because I don't think you were on the air. I think you were in college maybe when Riverfront went to Synergy, and there was a lot of backlash. People, I'll never call it Synergy. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be. I mean, do you the college to your show? Do you get that sense that people are going to kind of push back on Paycor, or giving what it means? Do you think people are going to embrace this name more?
I think, and I believe we talked about this. I think the fact that Mike Brown spoke about what his dad would want, mm-hmm, in ways that made a lot of sense and in ways that mesh with everything we've come to know about Paul Brown, I think that has put a lot of people in a position where they're willing to go along with this, where they might not have. Also, there's really a sense that this team could do no wrong right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure they can for some, but they're really, if they're doing this coming off 2-14 and nobody going to games, the reaction's a little bit different. But also, corporate names on stadiums are a way of life for a generation or two of sports fans. I mean, they just are. And so I think, you know, Riverfront Stadium turning into Synergy Field was like the first, if I'm not mistaken, the first sports venue in town that had a specific corporate name attached to it. We were still calling Shoemaker Center, Shoemaker Center. Xavier was playing at the Cincinnati Gardens. The idea of a name change wasn't so commonplace that it was probably still jarring for a lot of people. Mm. Now, everything's got a corporate name on it. Every stadium in the league that's not Soldier Field or Lambeau Field has a name on it. I said this to my audience last week. I go, hey, the building the Lakers played in the Showtime 80s, what was it called? Another Great Western Forum. You know, Great Western's a corporate name. You know, some of these, you know, places that had names on them, it goes back years. And so I just sort of feel like you have a generation of fans that have kind of grown up or grown so accustomed to very untraditional names that we're all willing to go along with it and just, okay, fine, that's what we're going to call it. There's also the realization, you call it whatever you want, man. I mean, if you want to call it Paul Brown Stadium, you're not going to get arrested. If you walk inside the gates of Paycor Stadium and say, man, it's great to be at Paul Brown Stadium, to the best of my knowledge, they're not going to remove you from the premise. So the reaction to this has been, I think, what it should be, and certainly vastly different than it was in 97. Because I remember that, man. I remember I'm not calling it Synergy Field. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I was like, plant my flag. I was in college, like, no chance I'm calling it that. I don't even like Synergy. Our power goes out all the time at this apartment we're in. Screw that. But you pay for the money for a new transformer instead of putting your name on a dilapidated stadium that nobody takes care of anyway. And I just think things are so drastically different than they were, you know, a quarter century ago.
Totally agree. And I don't think it's the exact same way. Why I have a big like painting of Riverfront Stadium in my house, and I've never once been like, didn't you like my Synergy Field art? You know, like, no, it's Riverfront Stadium. It's whatever it is to you and whatever you want it to be. And if people call it Paycor, good for Paycor. If people call it Pay Joe, good for Joe. Like, whatever. Who cares what, you know, what it's called? And I understand what it means. You know, to me, it was, if it's okay by Mike, it should be okay by all of us. He's the one whose dad's name it is. He's the one who's cared a ton about his name being up there. So if he says this is what my dad would have wanted, then who the hell are we to even have it matter? You know, other than you like the nostalgia of it or whatever. Well, you know, so be it. This is a business, and it all moves on.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the way that Mike articulated what his dad would have thought, I think, again, it meshed with everything we've come to understand about Paul Brown Stadium. Dad would have wanted what's best for the football franchise, and this is what's best for the football franchise. It also, I mean, you tip your cap to them from a business perspective, because this is the ultimate, you know, cash in while the value is at its highest, because I'm sure they've had offers to put a name on Paul Brown Stadium through different points of that stadium's history. It never made more sense than it does right now. The visibility has never been higher. They're going to be playing in huge games this year on large stages in that stadium. The season tickets are sold out, so a lot of people are going to be going. Like, it made more, from a business perspective, you kind of tip your cap to, you know what, you guys waited this out and did it at precisely the right time. But yeah, this is something that's going to benefit the overall greater good of the football team. Nobody's against that. And I feel like, to a degree, you know, Paul Brown last coached the Cincinnati Bengals in 76. It's before I was born, man. Paul Brown last had a hand in the day-to-day operations of the Bengals in early 1991. That's three decades ago. So I do think, to a degree, you have a couple of generations of fans for who Paul Brown is just a name. I've said this on my show a few different times. In the NFL Network of Football Life on Paul Brown, Chris Collinsworth makes the point, there's a George Halas trophy, a Vince Lombardi trophy, a Lamar Hunt trophy. I think now the Coach of the Year award is the Don Shula Award. The NFL does nothing for Paul Brown. So to me, I would sort of pivot it to the National Football League and go, dude, father of modern football, how do you have nothing that memorializes this guy's contributions to the sport? I think Bill Belichick has talked about this. When he passed Paul Brown for career wins, you know, he wore the fedora and he's like, you know, the NFL does need to do a better job of telling his story. So I would kind of point to the NFL and say, would you guys figure out a way to honor Paul Brown and do it in a way that, you know, sort of transcends Cincinnati or Cleveland. But I think here there's a couple of generations of people for whom Paul Brown is just a name. And I think to a degree that minimizes the level of pushback. Had Paul been around as recently as 2 years ago and had just passed, and the Bengals are like, ah, cool, guess what we're going to do? We're going to slap Paycor on it. I think there would be significant pushback. The reality is he hasn't been around for years. There's a lot of people, unfortunately, who really don't know what Paul did, his contributions to the city, his contributions to football. And that's sad, but I think that that sort of dynamic has lessened whatever pushback the Bengals might be getting on the name change. Plus, they just put his name in the Ring of Honor. So yeah. If you want to see Paul Brown's
it's
name,
inside the stadium
walk inside.
Now.
There it is. There's it Paul is. Brown.
Jay, you have trivia. Let's see how we can do on doing some trivia.
Yeah, okay. So it's still the same building, obviously, but under the name, under the moniker, Paul Brown Stadium, you guys have 179 games. Do you have any idea what the Bengals' record is inside Paul Brown Stadium?
So there's been one tie against Philly, two ties, and Carolina.
Philly and Carolina.
So that leaves us
177. 181 games then.
Oh,
okay. So we're adding the two ties.
Yes.
This counts postseason?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's got to be some. It's got to be 100 losses.
Nope.
It's got at least not even 100 losses?
No. They have a winning record in that building.
Do they really?
Yes.
How about
94,
that?
84, 85.
Well, I just wrote down 93. I was going to do the math. I was subtracting.
Too slow.
One off.
Wow. What was it, Jay?
94, 85, and 2.
How about that? Not bad.
Does Mo remember who scored the first Bengals touchdown in that stadium?
Peter Warwick.
Okay. First regular season touchdown.
Okay. Peter Warwick was the punt return
Nick
against
Lucci?
The Bears.
No.
2000.
No, it wasn't that.
Corey Dillon?
Nope.
Ron like Dugans.
Ron Dugans, yes.
Ron Dugans. Yeah. Florida State.
Boom, Ron Dugans.
Wow.
And the last touchdown scored by a Bengal in the building formerly known as Paul Brown Stadium was Tyler Boyd in the playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
Ron Dugans. Feeling good. Get Ron Dugans on the show. Let's go.
Third round wide receiver.
They got smoked a 24-7 by the Browns.
Tim Couch.
One.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tim Couch beat him.
former Miami of Ohio running back Travis Prentice scored the first touchdown overall in that building.
How about that?
Browns won that game 24-7.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mo, today, 3-4, ESPN 1530, me and you.
Yeah. And then I had this stadium naming rights expert on like weeks ago when they first announced they were doing this. And he emailed me. I mean, I wasn't done reading the press release. And he's like, buddy, it's done. I'll come on. So I guess we're getting him on today.
He's coming back.
By the way, did you do what I did and guess how many words into the press release before you saw the phrase strategic partnership?
Yeah. Yeah.
Strategic part. You knew that was going to be, to me, it was a matter of first paragraph, second paragraph.
Yeah.
Third. It's a little bit lower in the press release than I would have imagined.
Instead of being strategic, what could it have been? Whimsical partnership? Just one that had no strategy to it at all.
Yeah. I mean, why not just a partnership? What is a strategic? I'm going to start referring to my relationships, like my wife and I. It's not a marriage.
Partnership.
It's a strategic partnership. See how she feels about that. She would actually probably agree.
Yeah. Mo, I appreciate it. I look forward to our strategic partnership from 3-4 today.
All right, guys. We'll see you.
See you. All right, Mo Egger, ESPN 1530. All things stadium have been covered, so let's move forward. Bengals, Cardinals, Friday night at the Jungle.
Yeah, it's still the jungle.
I could call it the jungle. I'm just leaving it hanging out there, see if I'm going to even, if I, how I'm going to feel about calling it Paycor Stadium. But either way, they're playing Friday at the stadium that is next to the Banks and the Brady on the river in Cincinnati. The question we've been going around asking everybody this week is, you know, inside the building, we've been asking, who are you most interested in seeing play on Friday? Now, a lot of times that question will elicit an answer of rookies because it's their first NFL game experience and you want to see what they got and you're curious what they have. It can be people who maybe are coming off injuries. It could be people that have a new position. It could be people who are in a battle. There's a lot of different names I think that you could be interested in seeing. And we've gotten a lot of different names, and we'll have that piece later this week that I think people will be really interested to read of who Bengals players and coaches and staff members are talking about when it comes to interest and what they're going to look like when they play the games. For you, Jay, who are you most interested in seeing on Friday?
Well, I'd say Kwame Lassiter, but more so as a returner than as a receiver. I feel we've seen enough of him as a receiver, and yes, it's practice. It's different when the lights go on, but you know he's gonna get separation. He's gonna make catches. I really want to see what he can do in the return game, because special teams is that one element of practice that just never goes truly live. We even saw them have a couple live periods where they were tackling to the ground in 11-on-11. But with special teams, you never see that. It's not till the actual preseason games start. And if you remember back, that's how Alex Erickson won a spot on this team, you know, several years back. And it's going to be interesting to see what Kwame can do, because that's going to go a long way in whether he can make this 53-man roster. I talked to Darren Simmons yesterday, and he said he knows what he has in Trent Taylor. It's going to be Kwame Lassiter and Puka Williams handling the bulk of these returns in these preseason games. And if Kwame can have a couple solid ones, even one explosive one, I think it's going to go a long way in him making this 53-man roster.
And it's going to take a full preseason of building trust, you know, to actually win that job. It's going to take, I think it would take multiple explosive-ish, double-digit returns probably, double-digit yard returns, and certainly no mistakes or poor decisions. And to do, I mean, that's what it took for Erickson. I mean, he had multiple big returns, but you know, before he had the second one, I think in Atlanta, not in Atlanta, there was a second one later in that preseason. The first one was Atlanta. You know, they were still on the fence about it. Like, I don't know. We'll see. Could have just been luck. And when it continued to happen and the trust continued to build, he was willing to move on and willing to trust that guy in those spots. And that's what it's going to take to overthrow a guy in Trent Taylor, who you know what he is. You know what he's going to do. You know he's going to hand the ball to the official when he's done, and Joe Burrow and the offense is going to come out there, and that's what matters most. I agree. All the kick returners and punt returners are going to be fascinating to watch over the course of the preseason, because that's going to go a long way to deciding the back end of that room. If the Bengals don't make some sort of trade for a receiver returner type or something like that, maybe you could see that something like that happen and was to get closer to the season. I have Jeff Gunter, the seventh round pick out of Coastal Carolina, who has been a beast. He has been an absolute beast out here in camp. Just, you know, whether it be going a little after the whistle or whether it be just really playing well and catching people's eyes, I've been really taken aback by how many players and coaches have gone out of their way. Von Bell, I had already talked to him for this, and he had gone off and ate lunch or did something else, and he came and he buzzed directly across the locker room up to me where I was somewhere else and leaned in. He's like, make sure defensive lineman 93, put him in there too. Making sure, because he had forgotten him in the moment, making sure that he got in there. That's how people, I think, have felt watching him. He's been a surprise. As a seventh round pick, you know, you're basically undrafted free agent. I think it's been surprising to hear that. And then, you know, when you get into the preseason games, that the interior of the trenches is what you're really watching, because you can get you're getting a good feel for the edge players, you know, whether we're talking with the receivers and the corners and the safeties, you get a good feel for them in practice. You can see that. But this part of the game, you can only really learn in the games. And Carter, I think, Gunter is going to be interesting to watch. I would throw Zach Carter in that bucket too, though, who has also looked really good. The third round pick out of Florida, who's kind of the swing backup for BJ Hill outside guy for them.
Yeah, Gunter's right at the top of my list too. I mean, he's going to be unchained. They can't go as hard as they want to go in practice, and we've seen him mix it up earlier in practice. Took a swing at a guy the other day. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch him just go full bore. And the other one I think that is we haven't mentioned, but when I asked assistant coach Rob Livingston his pick, he said, "Well, Captain Obvious." Dax Hill, the number one overall pick, and Zach did confirm he's going to play in this game. So I think a lot of people are anxious, myself included, anxious to see how he looks in this preseason game as well. There's a number of them, and we've gotten, from all the people we've talked to, we've got a lot of different picks. There are some leaders in the clubhouse that seem to be catching everyone's eyes, but there's a number of other names that people are keeping an eye on. And you're right, it runs the gamut from guys that have been here for a while and are now getting a bigger chance, guys coming back from injury. I know people aren't, you get excited about that first preseason game and then the interest kind of wanes after the first series or two. But for fans that are really, really interested in the total embodiment of the 53 roster, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting pieces to watch Friday night.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we'll get Joseph Osai. I think maybe. I mean, it's hard to know. We're not going to see a lot of starters playing, that's for sure. Probably none, actually. None of the major starters are going to play. Is kind of what I think is the guess here, but. With Osai, they want to see him. They need to see him out there, but they're not going to put somebody out there who's not fully, fully cleared to play in a game. And you can be cautious with him at this point, maybe. So I'm curious. He'll be a curious one to see because he's been participating fully in everything here in practices. So if he's ready for the game, he's ready for the game. I don't know if they'll try to hold him back a little bit more. So Osai obviously is one that people will want to see once he gets out there. Other one on my Cordell Volson. I mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just don't know. I mean, until they get out there and he really does it, you don't really know how he's going to look. He's had rough moments in camp, but everybody, you expect that out of a rookie fourth round pick. So we'll see what he looks like out there in the games. But him and Carmen, that battle will kind of really commence all the offensive linemen here as they get going. All right, let's move on to scoops. Let's see if we got any scoops here, Jay. Jay, you got some scoops?
Yeah, this isn't a breaking news kind of scoop, but it's something, you know, what we want this segment to be, where things that you just don't work into a story or the podcast, just something that you notice off to the side. And mine involves Sam Hubbard. And we've talked a lot about how since Zach Taylor got here, that Sam has been the embodiment of what he wants this culture to be. There was, I think it was last Friday's practice. It was one of those practices where the defense just totally dominated. Last play of practice, Brandon Allen hits Hayden Hurst on a short little pass. He shakes the linebacker. I can't remember if it was Pratt or Davis Geithert was on him and takes off down the field. Hubbard, in 90 degree weather, 90 some percent humidity, takes off in a full sprint and chases him down from behind just to get the little tap on him to end the play. I mean, that just says everything you need to know about Sam Hubbard. And then yesterday they give him a vet day. And a lot of times guys take him for what they are, a chance to kind of relax, take it easy. Sam was over on the rehab field yesterday going through a heavy workout. He was doing the ropes, doing a bunch of the drills that the other injured guys were doing, getting a sweat on his off day. It's really impressive to watch the way that guy approaches his job. Even in the moments when not a lot of people are watching.
That was one that I believe it was Dan Horde was talking about this or tweeted it, one of the two, about Mike Zimmer was at practice. His son Adam is now an offensive consultant with the Bengals, and Zim, of course, has his famous ranch down in Kentucky. And so he was up hanging out and talking to Dan and mentioned, gosh, Sam Hubbard, just love Sam Hubbard, how well he plays. Anybody that's been around Zim knows that you're not exactly getting nothing but random compliments about players from Zim, okay? And that's one of those things where it's because of stuff like that. And you know, Bengals fans know that's just kind of the way that he plays and how he makes his living. Mine is a little different. So I was looking to talk to Jamar Chase the other day, and I knew he was supposed to be doing something with Chad. Chad's in town, of course, and you know, Chad's jumping on T. Higgins and like hanging out with Mike and doing Chad stuff, leaving massive tips for servers. I mean, you know, Chad's doing Chad, which is always fun and entertaining. And he was supposed to be doing something, I believe, that's called Generations. It's just like Boomer and Burrow did last year, watching each other's highlights and talking about it. It was going to be Chad and Jamar Chase. And, well, I think they came off a little early, or Jamar is clearly ready for Chad. He comes out of practice, he gets his gear on that he wants to wear for the interview, and he's clearly ready for Chad. And you see him kind of pacing, kind of circling the locker room, going outside, coming back, talking to equipment guys, looking around like, where could Chad possibly be, you know? And eventually, I think, finds him. Chad was either late because they came off a little early, or just got caught up, like apparently was hanging out on like the front offices. Like Chad's just, when you're Chad, you just have this free reign of everywhere. Okay. It just, you could just go down into like Mike's office and walk on in or walk. Like there are players. I remember when Michael Johnson signed, when he came back here and signed after his 1 year in Tampa, and he went in and signed up on 1A, up on the like main front offices in the room up there, and said, "This is the first time I've ever been in this part of the building before." Like, players don't go up there, okay? Like, people don't go up there. And the idea that Chad's just wandering around through there doing his thing is, while Jamar Chase is waiting on him downstairs, is just a fantastic visual and something that I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, I was told that the social team had this whole thing set up where they were going to film Chad walking into the building and going into his interview with Jamar. And because he was up in the business offices, he had to be escorted down into the locker room. They came in a different way. And so that whole video ended up getting scrapped. But you mentioned Michael Johnson. That room, that conference room where they sign their contracts, is – it's been named the Paul Brown conference room. So there's another area. He's in the Ring of Honor. His autograph is stitched in the jerseys. His name is on that conference room where Joe Burrow is going to sign this record-breaking extension, we presume, next offseason. There's quotes from him all over the building. There's still a long legacy of Paul Brown in that building, even though it's not going to be named for him anymore.
Can they just name like everything but the stadium for him? Basically, we can have the Paul Brown hallway. We can have like the Paul Brown water
press
fountain.
Box.
The Paul Brown, yeah. No, the press box. I think Jeff Hobson's name needs to be on the press box.
I would vote for it.
Alive Jeff Hobson. Okay, yeah. We don't wait. Don't wait until hopefully he stays with us for a long, 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 long time. I think Jeff Hobson's name should be on the press box. Who made a major appearance in Peter King's column this week? Good for Butch. I mean, stoop-shouldered Bengals.com boss. As Peter referenced him, Peter and Butchie are good friends and enjoy each other's company a lot. So it was fun to read that in a good background story on Butch, who also wrote about that himself, and him having a drill where he was waving a towel in front of Jamar Chase's face during one of the many reps off the jugs machine that Jamar does after practice.
When Butch with a PBU said he could tell his grandkids he broke up a pass intended for Jamar Chase.
Let's get to some of your questions here. Like all things, when you end up on the internet and on YouTube, it just ends up with people fighting each other in the comments. So shout out to everybody that's there yelling at each other as I try to sift through where the actual questions are. And you wouldn't be right if you didn't have people fighting, like coming in from international countries. We've got like other languages in the name, just shouting. Someone called Mo Buddy, which is like so low. We've just got lots of screaming and yelling about frauds and hangovers and all kinds of stuff. So that's great. The internet is doing it what it does. Let's go in and find a couple of questions in here. From Jim, a couple of names I haven't heard talked about from last year's class. How about Hubert and Sheldon? How they look in camp? Imagine both are on the bubble. But curious anyway, they are both on the bubble. Mm-hmm. I think that's certainly fair to say. I mean, Hubert, as a seventh round pick last year, was always going to kind of be on the bubble in a very crowded room. He's going to need to have a good camp to make this team when you consider they have this year's Hubert and Gunter also competing with him. And we mentioned Kareem. You know, you had Osai, you've got Cam Sample. It's just a really loaded group. And so he hasn't shown up much.
Neither of them have.
Yeah, I mean, Shelvin, obviously he had all the issues in the offseason, and he had the hand thing and the overweight stuff, and he hasn't exactly been in the good graces. So they're definitely both on the bubble. And from my view, Jay, I don't know what your view is, but I haven't seen much that's made me to believe that they're opening eyes at this point.
No. And Hubert even missed a practice the other day. And Shelvin has not. Now, where Shelvin's going to show up is in as a run stopper. And that's hard to get a good feel for in these practices when there's not much hitting. He will be someone that both these guys, the preseason games are going to be huge for, but we'll get a better idea of if he looks any better this year than he did last year in the preseason game with whatever amount of snaps he gets. But yeah, I in my original 53 before camp even started, I had Shelvin on the outside looking in, same with Hubert. I think he's, even as a fourth round pick, he's got an uphill climb to make this team.
Agreed. All right, let's go next into Irvin SM 1984. What position are they most likely to add a veteran who gets cut in the next couple of weeks? I continue to be curious to see what happens with a receiver returner type. Mm-hmm. That's a position that you do see discarded by teams that have two guys who are pretty good returners and one's a better receiver or whatever. Somebody who could bring a little bit more dynamic playmaking than Trent Taylor, and maybe bring you a little bit more to the receiver room if you don't end up seeing much from Kwame Lassiter or Puka Williams or any of these guys who are undrafted guys. I thought last year, you know, when you saw Jakeem Grant traded, I was surprised the Bengals weren't more involved. He's the type of, I mean, I think it was a sixth round pick. He's the type of player that you could see them trading for from a team that was going to make a veteran guy who's had a lot of success as a returner and as a receiver a cut. He could be something that you could certainly see happening. And tight end. And yeah, somebody who resembles Hayden Hurst a little bit. And they don't have anything. I mean, you got Hayden Hurst, Sample and Wilcox, and all these guys are much more of your blocking types. I mean, if Hurst goes down, if Hurst were to miss games, I don't see anybody on the roster that could really replace him. Not to say you're going to get somebody off the street that can do that, but somebody that at least that's kind of more of their game.
I mean, Thad Moss, he's more of a receiving type than blocking type, but I don't – he's that would be a steep drop from Hayden Hurst to him. The other position, I mean, maybe we see a repeat. Maybe we see him get a three-tech. Because you've got B.J. Hill, you've got Zach Carter. Beyond that, you know, it's more of the run stopper types of defensive tackles. They've got all these edge guys, and you know, maybe Sample moves back inside. But I think that if one of those guys becomes available somewhere, you could see them maybe doubling down and doing it again. It worked so well with B.J. Hill last year. The question then is, you know, where do you trade from? And a lot depends. If Jesse Bates comes back, all of a sudden that safety room is pretty deep, and maybe that's it's a safety for a defensive tackle or for a three technique type of trade.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next is actually right above that, the question from Nick, who said, what are the chances we see another trade before the season starts, similar to last year? If so, who would that be in the trade? I think you're right, Jay. I mean, I think, you know, Michael Thomas is a really solid veteran. And I think a guy that would be a solid third safety on most teams. They call him Uncle Mike. You know, he's like the only older dude on the whole team. He's the 31, I think. And you know, you've got a bunch of young dudes. You got Dax Hill and Tyson Anderson back there. I mean, if they play well and look good and Jesse Bates comes back, all of these things, I think, are the expectation. You're not going to, you know, keeping five safeties. You have Brandon Wilson, who I'm going to guess he'll end up on PUP. Missing the first 6 weeks, but you have him in the background too. You know, how many safeties do you need? And would someone who needs safety help be looking for a veteran who's played before, like Michael Thomas, and who's going to be a pro's pro coming in? Had back-to-back picks in camp this past week. I really like Michael Thomas and what he does for this team and the locker room and everything, but if you're able to get something that can help you more, on a guy that might end up being cut, you certainly would have to consider that. I would think that position stands out to me more than just about any on the roster, as far as maybe being able to get something for somebody who's proven a little more proven.
It's funny. I asked Michael Thomas where the Uncle Mike name, who gave him that name, and he said it goes all the way back to his Dolphin days. Xavien Howard called him that when Xavien was a rookie. And then he goes to the Giants, and someone else there started calling him it. And then when he said it followed him here to Cincinnati, and Marcus Bailey was the first one to drop an Uncle Mike on him here. So it's a name that it's not a well-known nickname, but for some reason it just keeps following him. And maybe that's because it is. He has this older, more mature presence about him, especially in this locker room with such a young team.
I got to give a shout out to these people in this fight on the YouTube channel right now. There is relentless. There is a lot of back and forth. Like I have not had any conversation with anyone where I'm that into it, where I am just like going to have 100 posts in like 15 minutes.
I'm seeing Joe Montana, Kansas City conversations. That's where it's devolved to.
So we got to be careful with the internet. Let's see. Dave Lennox down here. With the new PBS stadium upgrade designs that have been put out there, how much are those going to change now that they have sold naming rights, and what other kinds of new upgrades can we expect to be done? There's a bunch of potential upgrades that have been shown on those renderings. I don't think this necessarily affects that. I mean, it puts money in the pockets for whatever portion the Bengals are going to pay for. We don't know what that's going to be. I'm sure there will be fights over what that number is. But this does help them with that. But I mean, other stuff, you know, the big thing that I think you noticed was the brand new scoreboard with everything on the back of it, you know, the pavilions and all kinds of cool stuff on that kind of goes out on the back of the scoreboard, which obviously has incredible views of the river and the Roebling and everything else from there, where you could have all kinds of stuff in events that you could hold up there, and it'd be a really cool area where you could watch the game from the sides too. That was one of the biggest ones. So those renderings are out there. You can go and pick through what you like and don't like. There's a lot of the high end amenities, certainly, that you see a lot more connecting of the tops of the stadium and walk, you know, bridges and more escalators, to make getting around so much easier too.
Yeah, some of the stuff like the nightclub, I don't think that's realistic. Yeah. I don't know we're going to see that. I am curious to see, I don't know how this works, but you can pretty much bank on the fact that there's going to be a sports book, because they have the partner with Betfred. It's going to be legal in Ohio starting next year. I don't know what if they have a sports book in the stadium, if the Bengals get a cut of that at all. But that is definitely an upgrade, I think, is coming for sure with whatever renovations they do.
Yeah. Thanks everybody that has watched on YouTube. Hope people are liking the YouTube show. We're enjoying doing it for you, and you can come in and drop. You don't have to fight. Like, you can just come in and just say nice things too, you know, and we can all have a good time if that's possible still on the internet. I don't know. We're testing.
Where are they going to take this fight when we log off?
I don't
know. When we end the show.
Not to the streets. I'm sure they live in different countries. So, again, like, subscribe, rate, all those things, please. If you have anything you'd like to say, particularly if it's nice, we'd love to hear it. And if you have any comments for things you'd like to see on the show, just let us know. You can always hit us up on any of our stories or send us emails or anything like that. So on Twitter, of course, at Paul Danger Jr., at Jay Morrison ATH, if you want to send us any comments. So that'll wrap it up. We will have the walkout on Friday. That's right. The walkout is back, baby. The walkout is back as we will react after Friday's preseason opener against the Cardinals, and we'll be in full season form. So looking forward to all of that, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a good one.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.